Hello, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski with episode 2 of Disrupted, where we're talking to Will Gilchrist, the founder and CEO of Consig. And in our first episode, Will was talking about this very disrupted world in which he's standing at the cusp. He is someone from the southern suburbs of Chicago who moved his life and his profession across the world to the Far East and then first Hong Kong and then Singapore now, and who has left the world of established businesses to start his own. And it's a very disrupted company, I might add, doing something that a lot of people are not doing as effectively as they might. Will, welcome back to episode 2, and let's get into it. You've been talking a bit about sales and about people walking through the art of what we consider to be selling, but they're not really doing it in a meaningful way. One of the things you say on your website at Consig is that one of the things you really do in your organization is you help people obtain a greater awareness of the nature of selling. And I think one of the most important insights that you offered in that description is that the average sales relationship consummating in a deal is an 18 to 24 month prospect. And I think that's really interesting because in the startup world, where a lot of people in selling move invariably as they advance through their career or as they're coming toward that last chapter, they're finding that they're leading a company. And so then they're more apt to get a job in a startup because they're starving for talent and that experience is appealing to the company. And then when they get there, they're faced with an owner operator, or they're faced with a small group of executives that have started a company, and they're looking for someone and they're looking for that experience to suddenly be the magic bullet. And so when someone comes in, they say, okay, we want a 6 month or year projection of revenue to be X. And the new sales executive coming in says, what do I say? Because I want the job on the one hand, but on the other hand, that's completely unrealistic. Talk to me about how you work with companies in that, because that is a critical area where I think companies fail on the sales and marketing front, is the recognition of the reality of the transaction.
Well, Carey Institute did a study that 92% of all founders have never been on the sales floor before. Never sold a deal, really. They've sold things through relationships or through maybe some form of an inbound opportunity, but most have never had any substantive sales experience. So sometimes when the individuals who are starting the company are looking for sales talent or they have a sales projection to their investors, they don't have the experience to be able to come up with those forecasts realistically. They're just coming up with growth patterns based on what they would like to see, but it's not based on any real knowledge. And that's what you're normally finding. The advice that I would normally give to founders or people who have started a business and looking to build a sales team is for them to go sell it themselves for about 6 months. Literally, elect yourself as one of the people who's selling. Sell it yourself and you'll get a much clearer view on the expectations that you're putting on your new sales hires.
That's a really interesting perspective. So you obviously, in working with startups, started seeing a rash of companies that were doing exactly that. And you found a business opportunity in that, which you turned into a company, which you named Consig. And now you're out there providing a service. So tell me a little bit about how Consig happened and what it's designed to do with businesses for whom it elects to contract.
So I was in the startup space. I left Google and I was in a company that had some unrealistic forecasts, kind of what we were just talking about. And then I helped them. And then after a year of that, I went to another startup and it was ended up being worse in terms of their expectations. And I was dealing with multiple products at that point. And it ended up being a really horrible experience. The partners were bad. And needless to say, I was in a position to where I was kind of backed into a corner and I needed to decide whether or not I wanted to continue this cycle of being a hired gun for companies or just be my own company, bring on and make a safe space for salespeople, and then we're our own hired guns and we don't have to necessarily obey any flag. We can help all flags that we want to help, that want to be helped, but we're not necessarily attaching our careers to, let's say, the inexperienced or unrealistic visions, right? So I came to the decision to say, look, I'm going to create my own private army. I was in a very interesting place mentally there where I was very bitter because I felt like no one understood sales. I was reading Civilian Warriors by Eric Prince. We're just talking about the emergence of Blackwater, and Consig is designed based actually on Blackwater, the concept of his story and how it's structured as the mercenary group for large enterprises, and for Blackwater's U.S. government, for us, it's enterprises. So I was very inspired by kind of the structure, maybe not what Blackwater does, but by the structure.
Yeah, let's make Blackwater. Yes, you're a force to put out there. We're not talking about Black Ops here.
Yeah, we're not talking about Black Ops in terms of like just being in support of what they do, but the structure, you can learn a lot based on how will function. And that was actually something that I thought about, and I said, wow, that's very similar to what you could do in sales. So that's how the idea really came about, was being pushed in a extreme state of vulnerability, being very tired of how sales was operating and wanting to do something about it. And that's how the company started.
Amazing. Now, you also came up with an interesting name for it. Tell me a little bit about that story.
So this is the first time I've ever seen this publicly, but it's a hidden name internally. But so while I was reading Civilian Warriors, I was also watching The Godfather. I was in a really, very interesting Chicago state mentally at this point. I was very bitter. And I was watching The Godfather, and I was very interested in the character. I believe it was Tom Fagan, the conciliary of the Corleone family. And I liked how he was not necessarily a member of the family. He wasn't associated with anything like that. He was the professional representative of that family. And he was also the only person who could challenge and disagree with the leader of the family. He's the only person because he's the professional kind of counselor, right? The conciliary is the counselor. And I said, kind of a piece of the relationship that I want with my clients. Not that I want to disagree and challenge, but I want to be able to advise as well as take action, but also advise without it being an ego issue.
Yeah, and what I love about that is that for a lot of companies, where we were talking a moment ago about founders or key executives not having realistic expectations, being a consigliere is extremely critical because you have to be able to tell them, look, your investors are expecting X. You're not going to get there. We need to create a different narrative and a different strategy. And we've got to narrow the gap between expectations and reality so that we can come up with a plan that's going to work. And I think that is a very interesting place because a lot of people do this sort of false promise. You know, they come into a meeting and they say, yes, I understand, we're going to deliver on this. I remember talking with the sales executive in a previous role, and it was not only a function of being able to tell the CFO that they weren't going to make their projections, it was what time in the month they were able to do that. So they knew at the beginning of the month, for example, that they weren't going to make their number, but they kept talking about it as if they were until they slowly, and they didn't wait too long because then it would look like they weren't on top of the business. And so that became the dance, right? And that seems to me to be far afield of actually selling and understanding realistically where your prospect is and where your business prospects are. So that's what's interesting about the way you're setting up Consig. So talk about this disruption that you're causing in the world of selling and marketing and lead generation, and what you're finding is you're working with enterprises about this.
Absolutely. I mean, the reality is that our initial phrase, how we came into, I guess, try to disrupt the market, is why do you need a VP of sales? You literally do not need a VP of sales in your organization. There's no point. And I've seen them a dime a dozen out there. I've also been one as well. More often than not, the VP of sales doesn't do the selling themselves. They hire people to try to sell. If they win, they take the credit. If they don't, around 9 months, they're going to try to like get rid of the bad salespeople. They try to retain their job. If they can't, they have their 9 months, takes about 3 months to fire them, and then they move on and become VP of sales somewhere else, talking about how great they were. That's normally the trajectory of a VP of sales, and I saw so little of that.
That's truth-telling in the most powerful way. But if you look on LinkedIn, you're absolutely right. There are many, many executives out there who are being churned through the system. What would you advise them to do in this situation?
The VPs or the companies?
Both.
I'd advise the companies to hire consig. I would advise the VPs to be more active and involved in the actual sales process, you know, and on the ground, actually closing business. Maybe a sales team would be more inspired if the VP of sales also had a personal target on top of the team target. How cool would that be? Right? If you see your VP of sales doing cold calls and closing business, I think that would inspire a lot of your actual team that you also know what you're doing as well. But most VPs also, they were never on the ground. They were never doing lead generation. They were never prospecting really, right? So there's a lot of people that aren't necessarily very genuine in their holding the title. I know a VP of sales for a very, very famous company out here in Asia who didn't really even know what a CRM was. Can you believe it? And it was something that I said, this is a prime example of why this business exists, why I exist, that I'm explaining a CRM and the importance of a CRM to a company that's made tens of millions of dollars and has hired this person to be the vice president of sales. Prime example.
So consig is really going into companies and identifying how to outsource sales and marketing the way you might outsource other functions in the company. You outsource your supply chain management, you outsource other functions, but we tend not to outsource selling. We tend to think that needs to be in-house. And why do we think that way?
I think it's because people believe that they can do it. They believe it's easy. They believe it's just hiring someone who's charismatic. They don't see it as a martial art, which it is. It's a skill. And you need to hire skilled people to do it. They think that they could just hire cheaper resources to get more volume, which would give more sales, or more expensive resources for their network. But they're not respecting the skill in itself of actually selling. And that's normally what I see. So they're not outsourcing it because they believe that it's something that at the end of the day, they just don't have time for, not something that they can't actually do.
That's really an interesting perspective. I want to pivot a little bit, you know, and think about the role of salespeople. So as we invited more people in the sales profession to join us on episode two here, as they're listening on, I think it's really important to talk a little bit about the way in which the pandemic disrupted selling as we know it, because so much of the work of salespeople is on the ground in front of a customer. And that evaporated in the span of a couple weeks, where suddenly you couldn't be in front of someone. And I think if we're being honest, during the course of that year, we learned a few things that were effective from the perspective of using Zoom or a CRM or other tools to connect with customers. But what we also learned, if we're really being honest, is it didn't replace it. So many of us had to reinvent ourselves. Can you talk a little bit about the reinventions and the things that we did learn about that very disrupted time that work and that sales professionals should be thinking about now in the post-pandemic aftermath? Because one of the things that's clearly changed is the willingness of companies to embrace people coming in and meeting with them face to face. A lot of companies are finding that that's no longer necessary, and they can get, you know, and they don't necessarily encourage or invite that, making it difficult for salespeople to continue to explore opportunities and move them along.
Well, that's a really great point. And look, we almost tripled our size during the pandemic because magically, suddenly outsourcing was very attractive during that time because companies couldn't rely on their marketing anymore. They couldn't rely on a lot of inbound. Suddenly, outbound sales was the hottest thing in town, right? So we were kind of vindicated by history on that by saying, by the way, this is a skill. And notice how, since you don't have these things to rely on now, really hardcore skilled salespeople doing the outreach are the ones that are going to navigate you through the storm. So we had a lot of business during that time. But one of the things that, beyond just the emergence of the, you know, the use of Zoom and the not needing to go into the office every day and, you know, the new norm components, one thing that I was very happy to see, and I didn't realize I'd be this happy to see, is the emergence of more employment opportunities for the disabled, more employment opportunities for the elderly. Right now,
because now their barriers to working are eliminated, right?
I love it. I think that is amazing. Now we have people who are elderly who have more sales opportunities. You know, the disabled, the, you know, I can go down the list of the people that normally indirectly or subconsciously would be moved outside of roles or kind of put into certain boxes, now have the complete opportunity to utilize the same skill sets as anyone else. And it's complete equality now. So that's a really good thing that I saw. And I thought that was kind of a blessing or silver lining in disguise of what's happened now in the new norm, that the playing field is more equal.
Well, and now that you have assembled a lot more clients during that explosive growth time, I want to pivot a little bit and riff here with you and compare notes. Having been a sales and business development professional for 40 years now, I have my own thoughts about what those skills are. So for our listening and viewing audience on Disrupted here, we're talking with Will Gilchrist, the founder of ConSig, a former Google executive who is disrupting the world of sales as we know it. And he's been talking about the fact that a lot of companies don't really understand sales. And as a consequence, they also don't understand the need potentially to outsource aspects of it. But we haven't settled on what are those essential skills. If you're the sensei of the world of the martial art of selling, Will, I want to hold you to that. And I want to understand and unpack, what are the two or three essential skills as you're building this Delta force, this mercenary force of people who are actually effective at the art and the craft of selling? What are the things you're finding are core to the DNA of someone who's effective doing it?
So the first thing that I ultimately want to advise people to realize is that no one cares nor is obligated to care about any product or anything that you have to provide, or even give you time to have that opportunity to present something that they don't care about anymore. That is just a reality of life. It doesn't matter how passionate you are about your product, how revolutionary it is, how cool it is, how well functional it is, or how much it could help a business. No one cares. And if a salesperson can understand that as a standard right in the beginning, you're going to be a far better salesperson, because you're going to have a conversation that's not based on how cool you are. You're going to have a conversation that is a business conversation that contextualizes value. That's where you can go across cultures. Doesn't matter what country you're selling in. Everybody recognizes value. So that would be the first thing. How many can I go? Because I could probably go 1,000 of these examples.
Yes. I just want to get the top essential one. So give me your top five.
One, nobody cares. Two, listening is probably the most important reality in sales, more than speaking or presenting. Understanding where someone's coming from and their motivations. I would also say that one of the most important things as well is understanding your voice. Understanding what you really want to say and have an actual opinion, not only about your product, but also about the market as well, and contextualize whatever you're selling, how relevant is it to not only the individual that you're talking to, but also the market, and not just grabbing one-liners from things you're reading about it off the website. Really have a personal opinion to where it matters, because if you really believe in those statements, you're going to speak from a very genuine place, which kind of leads me to,
I'm going to stop you right there, because that's a really fine point. It's the idea that a salesperson who's effective brings an effective, comprehensive understanding of the client's business connecting with their business. And I think the fault line there is probably somewhere around the research that they do, or the amount of time they take to actually understand their own company's product and how it works. Sometimes when we're given a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think sometimes salespeople don't understand a larger context of where the nails actually are. And so they're pounding on different things. And a lot of those, a lot of that pounding doesn't land very well.
Well, that goes to kind of that point of product dumping, right? Product dumping is, when you should be focusing more on behaving more like a doctor than a street peddler. Imagine going to the doctor and before you even say anything about how you're feeling, the doctor immediately says, I have Panadol, I have Tylenol, I have Advil, I have aspirin. That would be very weird for a doctor, before you say anything, to say all the medications that he has. He's not a regular doctor. He seems like something else. And more often than not, that's how people are selling. But if you look at a real doctor, the doctor sits back and says, what are your symptoms? What's going on? Let me check your temperature. How long has this been an issue? You know what? Come back in 7 days. That's actually the behaviors of a solution salesperson, right? So I would say definitely never product dump. That's the worst thing. And that leads to also people not caring as well, because that will, you'll learn really quick how people don't care if you're product dumping. Another thing is hone your craft. Very few people practice sales. Very few people do the 50 or 60 cold calls a day just to get used to their rhythm, right? No one sharpens their blade every day. Right. I still, even though I'm running a business that does sales and I have a lot of people doing, I still do cold calls. I still practice to keep my blade sharp, to know what it's like. Right. I still sometimes spend a morning with some people in my team and work on their accounts with them. And I love it. And they think it's so strange, but I'm like, no, I need to know this. I need to know what it's like. Right. So practice is always key. I guess that's cliche, but practicing in sales is equally important as well. Also, being knowledgeable. Sometimes the best deal, a lot of times, are when you're not selling. Are you in positions to sell? Are you active in your market? Are you going to the right networking events? Not for the purposes of selling, but for the purposes of being a name, a person who is a salesperson for this company. You don't always have to sell. This always be closing thing is great for the movies. But the reality is, if you're present and you're a name that sells this particular thing and you're properly presenting yourself, you'd be surprised how many referrals randomly you get. Or you walk down the street and say, hey, I was talking to this guy. I thought of you because I remember at this whatever cocktail party, you were saying that this is what you do. I got to introduce you.
So it really is the ABCs, but it's not always be closing. It's always be connecting. You're always connecting with someone.
I love that. Right? I think that's exactly, wow, I got to use that, man. That's awesome.
Well, that comes with 40 years doing it. You know, I want you to talk too about one of the things I think is most important and least understood by people. And that's the art of being relatable and being understandable and being, really genuine. You know, we hear a lot about authenticity now. It's the cultural, slogan of the day right now among businesses. We need to create an authentic culture and we need to be authentic with each other. But what does that really mean for you, Will, when you're hiring people, when you're training them, when you're working with them in their accounts, and when you're expecting them to be out working their accounts?
Well, authenticity is how comfortable are you with your narrative? How comfortable are you with having a regular conversation? A lot of our sales training, and I still do some trainings as well, is I bake it into a regular conversation. I start to talk to people about their day, maybe their family, maybe take them out to a bar or a place with loud music, and out of nowhere just say, by the way, what does this software do? Out of nowhere, right? And just see them stutter. And then I always say, when they stutter, I say, see, that's because you're trying to go off a script versus knowing exactly what it is that you want to say. Believe it read it, understand it, internalize it, and not just what this software does that you're selling, but also what does this person do in the organization? What do you do? What is your role? What is your general look? So oftentimes I find that a lot of people don't internalize the work that they're doing, and that removes them from being genuine and authentic in their narrative, because they're trying to find words that sound good versus sounding like themselves. And you see that in corporate, you see that in startups, and you see that in blogs. You see it all the time where they're using phrases that are popular versus using a phrase that they would use.
You know, that's really interesting. So now we have it. We have some of the basics. We have an understanding of the people we're talking to. I love the fact that you start out with the no one cares, because if you start out there, you immediately recognize that you have to do something to inspire caring, to inspire interest. Oftentimes I was asked when I was managing salespeople, I'd ask them, what's the first goal or the most important goal of this first call? You've been introduced to the person, you're going to have their first opportunity to meet with them. What's the most important goal? And they'd talk to me about, well, I think we've got to start with, you know, this product or this product. And I'd say, wait, back it up, back it up. The first order of business is to earn the right to a second call, because nothing will happen if you don't establish some connection, some understanding of your value sufficient that someone's going to invite you to return to the conversation. I think that's where a lot of it gets lost. A salesperson doesn't, it's like the, you know, you were using the sports analogy. Well, it's like the quarterback setting his feet, right? If you don't set your feet at the outset, you're never going to connect the pass. You're going to be able to throw it as far. You're going to be able to spot the receivers, but you're not going to connect. And I think that's one of the critical places where selling fails, is that people really didn't start out strong. And so the taint of their subsequent calling and their outreach is not solid, because the person really isn't sure, why is this person? And they finally concede after three or four attempts, okay, I'm going to talk to this person or I'm going to ghost them. But they never really got it off the ground.
Absolutely. There's no such thing as a one-call close. That doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, and people who say, yeah, no, I closed them on one call. I'm like, no, no, it cannot happen. Decisions don't happen in that way. And that's definitely it. Like, you have to set yourself up to be able to present value. I mean, another piece of that too, Ron, is that I don't necessarily think I've ever sold anybody in my life. I think I've had effective conversations to be able to showcase a value for someone to kind of make a decision on whether or not they're interested in the value that I talked about. I don't think there's such thing as like selling someone. You're not convincing anybody. It's really just, like
you're helping to create an environment where they can make a decision that in turn is in parallel with what you're interested in them deciding, which is to do business with you.
Mutual interest by way of environment creation. Yes.
For our listening and viewing audience, this has been episode 2 with Will Gilchrist from Consic, talking about the disrupted nature of sales and marketing in this disrupted world of work. We're going to cut off here, but when we come back for episode 3, we're going to ask Will to focus his attention on the business leaders that we're approaching. We're going to allow him the opportunity to be the salesperson that's doing the cold call and walking us through, what are you telling people at Consic that's contextualizing your value, extending your relationship with authenticity? We're going to really put him on the spot. So stay tuned. Come back to us. Episode 3. You're going to hear it from one of the senseis in the world of sales, Will Gilchrist, Consic, here on Disrupt It. Come back.